Hello, hello, and welcome to this episode of How to Thrive, a podcast about mind and body well-being for the modern woman. I am your host, Nikki Hursthaus, a dietitian and yoga teacher, and within my day-to-day work, I help amazing women feel confident around food and in their body. There is a lot of noise in the nutrition, health, and wellness space, and this podcast is a tool to help you feel confident and empowered in your choices so you can thrive. Just a reminder that the information discussed in the podcast is for educational purposes only and cannot encompass all the nuance and detail of every individual's lived experience. If you are needing some individual support, I do encourage you to book a free discovery call to start that journey. Well, this week, I'm really excited to invite Dr. Tim Crowe onto the podcast. Welcome, Tim.
Nikki, it's great to be on the podcast and it's wonderful to connect with you again after some years.
I know. And just so for those listening, first connected with Tim when I started dietetics at Deakin University. That was a very long time ago now. But Tim, what's your story? What's led you to today?
So today, I just describe myself as a career research nerd tragic. So all my life has been in the area of nutrition research, so running clinical trials in a teaching aspect of a university. But the last few years now, I'm actually primarily working in the freelance health and medical world. So I do a lot of freelance consulting, health and medical writing, and science communication. So my background is absolutely informed by scientific evidence and scientific research. But now I get to talk and communicate it all the time, whatever is the current hot topic of the day, which in nutrition, there's always plenty of big topics to talk about. So that's what I do with myself. And I really love it. I love the field of nutrition. I love talking about the research behind it.
Yeah, which is great because there's so much noise, I guess, between what's research, what's just marketing, you know, what claims should we believe. Before we talk about our big topic of today, over the years, what are some really, I guess, interesting or maybe controversial topics that you've had to dive into and talk about and speak to in different capacities?
I guess I always describe nutrition as like fashion. Trends come and go. And one thing I've seen reoccur many, many times over my 30 years in the field is the area of low carbohydrate diets. First of all, it was high protein, then it became Atkins, then it sort of morphed into paleo, now it's keto. So it's really dealing with just reinvention of dietary themes that no matter where you're coming from, they actually all distill down to fairly similar messages. You know, eat mostly minimally processed food. And whether you have some mostly plants or some animal foods, they're really not that much different. They just sort of target specific nutrients. So the trends and fads come and go, and I try and focus on what is the commonality about all of this rather than just perennially riding the wave of debunking the latest sort of fad. I roll with it because I know that in 6 months' time, no one's doing keto. They've moved on to something else because it's too difficult. So I try and work it to my advantage rather than lose sleep and have mental anguish about all these fads and trends. So I'm a much better place for that.
Yeah. And I think that's something that people sort of early into the nutrition space, you get very worked up about things that
may not be accurate. Change the world. Exactly. And you just can't you just can't spend your all day correcting misinformation. And I'm at a stage in my career where I hold on to the truth and facts a lot less tightly because I acknowledge the research is never as strong as what we think. There is certainly a lot of realm for personal experience. So rather than try and deny and fight things, I sort of acknowledge, well, we've got a diversity of views, diversity of ways we can eat for good health, then, you know, empower you for that. But I try and give good information so people can make some sensible, credible choices from that, not just go down the rabbit hole of the latest fad and trend.
Yeah. And that's so key, isn't it? It's like so long as we're helping people make informed choices, like it's still their choice, right?
Correct. Yeah. I lose zero sleep if someone has dairy or not has dairy. I don't care. I do not care. But I care that you actually have made that decision based on some, if it's about the science and health, you've made it on some reasonably good evidence, not extremely biased cherry pick research. That's where I come from.
Which is great. So today we are diving into the world of collagen, a very, I guess, big topic that we see everywhere now. And even when you just sort of look at advertising, if you're Googling things, if you see it on social media, you know, there's all these claims everywhere that collagen will help you with your hair and skin and nails and joints and gut health. Like it's these claims are sort of everywhere. And I did ask on social media if there was anything that people wanted to know about collagen for this episode. And pretty much the response from everyone who replied was, does it work?
Yes.
So we're going to get to the bottom of that today. But I guess let's just take a step back and talk about what is collagen? What is it actually?
Okay, so collagen is a protein, and it is the most abundant protein in your body. Okay, so about a quarter of the protein in your body is collagen. So it's a major structural and functional protein. We need it for our skin integrity. We need it for our joint integrity. We need it in our corneas. We need it in our blood vessels. It really is the soft tissue that holds us together. So it's a super strong molecule. There's about 28 different types. They vary a little bit, but there's really types 1, 2, and 3 are the most common. It's a critical protein, so we have to have it. The sad thing is that when we talk about collagen, it's our skin that has lots of it. And we know that over time, with age, we lose collagen with age. And that is one of the whole visual hallmark signs of aging is a declining in collagen in our skin. And with that, you lose strength and integrity and get wrinkles. But collagen is not just about looking good. It has, you know, many other roles in the body. It potentially has anti-inflammatory roles. It's involved in a whole host of metabolic processes. But at least externally, we can see it in our skin. But also in our joints, we can lose cartilage as we age. And about 3/4 of the cartilage and tendons is also made up of collagen. So it's a major protein. That's why there's so much focus on it as far as retaining what we've got or rebuilding up what we've lost. And enter the world of collagen supplements.
Yes. So collagen supplements, I guess that's come about and really boomed in the last few years, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
I don't know how long the research goes back, but why supplements? Why can't we be just getting it from food?
Okay. So collagen is in animals. It's in us, that therefore it means it's in animals. So when we eat animal foods, particularly a lot of the soft tissue outside of the meat, we'll be getting collagen. We can get it in bone broth. We can get it from the skin of fish, the skin of chicken, and so on. So we eat it in our diet. Also, it's all throughout our food supply as the ingredient gelatin, which of course you add gelatin to water and you get jelly. So it has important properties in the food industry. So unless you are a vegan, you are eating collagen every day to some extent. The thing is, we love lean cuts of meats and lean cuts of everything. So we actually get very little collagen naturally in our diet. So we get some, but not a lot. Now, the idea of these supplements is that, first of all, they can give you a much higher dose. And the other thing is that they're hydrolyzed. And all hydrolyzed means is you get collagen, be it from a fish or from chicken or a cow. You boil it, you denature it, and then you use enzymes to make it into smaller pieces. And when you do that, you make it very soluble. And it's much easier to put in your coffee and in other beverages. Because if you don't do that, you have gelatin, and that is a bit messy to consume. But otherwise, it's very similar to gelatin. It's just shorter chains of amino acids. So collagen is about 1,100 amino acids in length, but you can chop it up into smaller chunks of about, 30 to 50 amino acids. And that's easier to digest and absorb, but it's still collagen.
Yeah. Okay. And so now that the supplement form is, being promoted widely and there's a lot of claims behind it, how do we know whether any of these claims are valid?
So by the introduction I gave to myself, I'm a career scientific research nerd. And if you had asked me 10 years ago about collagen, I could maybe find a handful of very small clinical trials. But that was 10 years ago. We now have dozens and dozens and dozens of randomized controlled trials, giving collagen to people in a blinded fashion to either look at markers of skin aging or markers of joint health as being the most common ones. And when you combine that research together, you actually get some very favorable outcomes showing that collagen actually has a real effect. So 10 years ago, I'd be negative on it, but now I'm actually looking at the evidence and going, okay, there is seriously something going on here. It improves skin hydration, skin elasticity, visual appearance of wrinkles, and it can aid in joint health, potentially reducing pain from osteoarthritis, as well as enhancing exercise recovery and maybe even tendon repair. So that's quite a long list, but I can cite dozens of clinical trials, randomized controlled trials, to show that the benefit is there. Everyone's mileage may differ, but it's wrong to say there's no evidence it works. There is evidence. Sure, the quality of the evidence can be debated, but it's still evidence at a reasonable level for something that is a food.
Yes. And when we're talking about skin health, you know, you cited a lot of benefits. I mean, how long do you have to be taking a supplement to be able to see those benefits?
So most of the research has been done in skin health. And as I can count at least 26 randomized controlled trials. About 95% of the people in those trials are women. They are much more interested in the physical aspects of collagen. That's just the people that enroll in the trials. There's been benefits seen by 4 weeks and definitely up to 8 weeks. Now, that means that you may not see a huge benefit, but you can go into a laboratory and actually get objective measures of hydration, elasticity. None of these rubbish trials the beauty industry does where they say, you know, 9 out of 10 women felt their skin was more glowing and hydrated after using our product. They're just rubbish. These are real clinical trials using objective measures to assess these factors by people who are blinded to if they're taking collagen or a placebo, and researchers who are blinded as well who are doing the assessment. So they're much higher quality. Just to get to something you hear a lot about it, it's because the big claim in this newspaper articles dismissing it is that it's all funded by the collagen industry. Utter rubbish. At least a third of all those trials I mentioned, more than a third, have no ties with industry or research or conflict of interest, and they are just as likely to show a benefit as studies that do have industry funding. So I just wanted to get that out there. It's people are just very lazy to dismiss this because it's all funded by the collagen industry. That's not true. Collagen industry does fund research. So too does independent researchers, and they get very similar findings in their results, very similar findings.
I mean, we could say that's something that any food research gets dismissed immediately for being funded by, quote, industry, when often it's not at all. But I think it's a bit of a trust factor there, isn't it?
And true, absolutely.
Trusting claims that are out there. So we've talked about skin health, and you also mentioned before with regards to joints and pain there. And obviously we have some collagen in our joints. So is the evidence, I guess, as substantial for looking after our joints and helping with joint pain?
So really good question. By far the biggest research area is skin health. So I can cite at least 26 clinical trials. For joint pain, particularly osteoarthritis is the most common. So far, there's only 5 clinical trials I'm aware of. They point to a benefit, but the number of trials isn't as great. But the benefit seems quite strong as far as improvements in pain and mobility, which are the biggest issues with osteoarthritis, but just 5 studies. And then you're getting into areas such as more exercise recovery and injury and tendon repair. The amount of research is not as great, but it is still pointing to a positive benefit. And I always take it back to the skin health area, where there clearly is a benefit. So it supports that other areas should show a benefit as well.
I've been scouring the internet at looking at all different collagen products in the lead up to us talking to see all the different claims that people were making.
Yes.
And it's not just about skin and joints. They're talking about hair and nails. And then also there's claims around gut health. So is there any evidence for those areas?
So I've seen one reasonable clinical trial to show that it may help with nail strength and integrity, which makes sense. Our nails also have some collagen in them, as well as keratin. Gut health, it's a big fat zero. Doesn't mean that it won't be of benefit for your gut. Just there's no clinical trials, and I don't even know what you'd measure as far as gut health goes. So the idea is that you take collagen that helps repair the integrity of your gut lining. Seems plausible. There's a bit of collagen and connective tissue there. But I wouldn't be taking it just for generic gut health. I think the biggest thing you can do for your gut health is just eat more plant foods. Don't worry about collagen. Yeah. It's plant foods for the win by a country mile, absolutely, because of all the prebiotics. If collagen has an extra benefit, maybe not. But the claims about it for gut health are bunk because there's no evidence to support it. Now, when I say no evidence, it doesn't mean it won't work. Just there's no scientific evidence for people to make that claim. And there's a big difference between no evidence and the evidence that we have shows it doesn't work. So it's column A, not column B.
Yeah. We also just have to be really careful because gut health is a very broad term. Like, what does a healthy gut even mean for a lot of
people? There's no definition for gut health, which is no accepted definition of what it means. So, you may take collagen, feel like, oh, I feel better. I've got less IBS this week. And, hey, my gut health has been healed and improved. You know, maybe it was the collagen. Maybe it was just a placebo effect. So, we don't know at this moment if it's going to do much.
Yeah. So another area that I see a lot is being pushed for women postpartum.
Yes.
And that's a big area where there's a lot of push with collagen. From what we've talked about with like benefits for skin, benefits for joints, like is there something that I'm missing here as to why this would be pushed for women postpartum?
Really good question. So there's not any research I'm aware of that have just used women postpartum, but there's a much stronger reason why it should be a benefit because what happens during pregnancy, there are as you know, a whole host of changes going on in a woman's body hormonally. And one of those changes is collagen sort of, it softens and it allows it to stretch more, obviously to accommodate the growing baby in the woman. And obviously postpartum, all that skin has to get back to its normal size, which it doesn't always do that. Hence the idea of having stretch marks, which is less elastin and collagen that's lost its tensile strength. There certainly is a use case for collagen to help with that process postpartum of actually helping the skin to bounce back, for want of a better word, to its pre-pregnancy state. And there's a rationale that collagen should help the collagen that's been changed because of pregnancy and also improve the levels of elastin. Because collagen, when you take it, it doesn't just also support collagen growth in the body. It also promotes the production of elastin and also hyaluronic acid, which is a key molecule involved in water retention, hence the link with collagen and skin hydration. So it's a very plausible, it's much more plausible to me than gut health, taking collagen postpartum, absolutely. So it may help support the repair and the regeneration of the skin back to more of what its life was like before pregnancy. But I'm not saying it's going to be a cure for stretch marks and having perfect skin to what it was, but it may help at least, support that process to an extent.
It's really interesting. And so if we were going to take collagen to see some of these benefits, how much do you need to take?
So in all of the clinical trials, they can use varying doses. I've seen benefits down to about 5 grams a day. Recommended doses can range from 5 to 15 grams, but I think certainly 5 grams is more than enough to potentially see a benefit. More may not always be better, and collagen can be relatively expensive compared to other protein supplements. But the thing is, and this is probably one thing I haven't touched on, the question may be, why take collagen? Why not just take some whey protein or some pea protein? And it's all the same, isn't it? Well, the answer is no. The thing about collagen compared to any other protein, it's unique because it contains one special amino acid. I'm going to nerd it up just for a little bit. It's called hydroxyproline. And what's special about hydroxyproline? We make it from proline and we need vitamin C. And that's the link between vitamin C and skin health. The only place you see hydroxyproline in your body is in collagen. When you eat collagen, it's digested into small little peptides of 2 to 3 amino acids long. And most of those peptides contain hydroxyproline. So you can measure these in the blood. They happen in your blood when you eat collagen. They are not inert. They can redistribute to the skin And the key thing here is that they can bind to receptors on skin cells called fibroblasts to stimulate them to produce collagen, elastin, and hyaluronic acid. That, to me, is the most key thing about this whole collagen story. There is a plausible reason why collagen and only collagen will have an effect on collagen production in the body outside of generic effects that normal protein and vitamin C may give us. Mm. Collagen is special because of the hydroxyproline and the signaling peptides. And that gets lost when people dismiss it out of hand. Because if that mechanism didn't exist, I'd be more skeptical about it. But we have a plausible mechanism to explain why it should be of benefit, why these clinical trials seem to show a benefit.
Mm. It's really interesting. And yeah, totally fine to like nerd out on the detail because I think often
I know that too much on it.
Often we need to know why and like why is something working and or like how does it work to really understand, I guess, the benefit from it. Most supplemental forms of collagen that we see come in two forms. There's the marine collagen and then the bovine collagen. So what is the difference there?
So marine collagen comes from marine sources, which is mostly going to be fish or jellyfish. Essentially, it's a waste product because the thing about collagen, that even if it comes from bovine or marine sources, that is not, animals are not being killed for the collagen. It's a waste product of all of the offal that we don't want to eat, of all this, all the fish scales. So although I'm not saying it's vegan friendly, absolutely not, I'm saying that as far as your ethics go, collagen is a byproduct or waste product essentially of animal processing. That's where it comes from. So it's a great revenue stream for companies. Marine is the most common source, the most researched source, followed by bovine. Is one better than the other? Well, for those companies promoting marine sources, they'll say their source is better. For companies promoting bovine, we'll say their source is better because, you know, slash, you know, organic or grass-fed or whatever, you know, nonsense term they want to talk about that link it to collagen. I look at the clinical trials and it's all collagen. It has similar effects. So whether it's pig, chicken, cow, fish, it all seems to work. So just choose whatever one you like. If you buy fish collagen, marine collagen, it will have a fishy taste. If you buy bovine collagen, it might have a little bit of a beefy taste. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And in another conversation, we did talk about something I discovered was a product that contained vegan collagen. Is that even a thing?
So I'm yet to see any product that claims it's vegan collagen actually provide evidence that it contains these hydroxyproline peptides in it, because plants don't make collagen. That is a fact. What is normally promoted as vegan collagen, they use the word collagen supporter or collagen enhancer. It will contain vitamin C, which you need for collagen production to an extent. It'll contain a range of amino acids. It will contain a few botanicals, but I've yet to see any evidence any of them contain these hydroxy containing peptides. So if it doesn't contain that, then you're taking it on faith that these supplements are going to do the same thing as the animal sources of collagen. So this is not saying that it has to be animal, but as far as the research goes, it's all animal collagen because of its unique properties. There's been no studies I've seen with what's called vegan collagen. So normally it's just a soup of amino acids. So at this stage, if you're a vegan, keep being a vegan. There are lots of health benefits from a vegan lifestyle and a vegan diet. But if you want to take collagen that's based on evidence, it has to come from an animal, full stop. There's a bit of GMO collagen being developed, but that probably doesn't align with most people's philosophy about a healthy diet and so on. So at the moment, it's got to be from an animal source. Anyone selling you vegan collagen would be very skeptical about what they're selling. I want this for them to show evidence that they contain these hydroxyproline peptides, which they can't because plants don't make it. They don't make it.
Is the GMO version the same as like a synthetic form? Is that possible?
Yeah. Exactly right. It's GMO. So you get bacteria to churn out your collagen. Simple. Mm. It's very niche. It's expensive. Maybe in the future we'll see more of it, but I don't think this product will take off because if you don't want to eat animal foods, well, you've got your own ethical value judgments. It's unlikely you'll be, you know, stampeding towards GMO sources of food. But for many people, it probably doesn't align with that philosophy. So I don't think we'll see it as a major competitor to animal collagen, especially when there's so much animal collagen around. Like in the end, they're not killed for the collagen. It's a byproduct. I always say that, but you know, at least it may soften the people's views on eating an animal food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we talked a little bit in a previous conversation about, I guess, the different products, and you've touched on it a little bit here. I mean, you know, as basic as supermarket gelatin, you know, that contains some collagen, but in a slightly different form. But then we've got all of our supplemental forms that can come in an array of different things. So they're packaged in with protein powders, to put in your coffee, to take as a tablet. Is there any real difference between the form that the collagen comes in and the way you might take it?
So all of those clinical trials I've mentioned, it's not like they all use one form of collagen. There's a whole diversity of different forms. There are companies that are making their own proprietary type of collagen that they enrich for more of these peptides. There are collagen that's specifically type 2 collagen, which you mostly find in your cartilage. So they are targeted towards joint health. When I look at all of the clinical trials, bear in mind there's not enough research with one particular form to compare one versus another. I don't see a big difference between them. So I always say this when it comes to buying collagen, if you want to trial it, base it on two factors: how much collagen per serve that you get and price per serve, because you can pay a lot of money for collagen with a whole lot of additional ingredients, which you really don't need that much. Mm-hmm. Make an informed choice, mostly based upon price rather than marketing hype and claims. And in the end, you can trial a product for 2 months. If you find that's of no benefit, stop and trial another product. You know, relatively, it's not that expensive if you are sensible about what form that you buy and you don't overpay for marketing hype and fancy labels and fancy flavors and tastes and all that sort of stuff. Just focus on the collagen. That's all you need to take.
And I've seen some supplements that say, you know, it's just pure collagen, right? Like it's just collagen. But it's collagen with vitamin C. Is that an essential component that we need to have when we're taking collagen?
So absolutely. If you are deficient in vitamin C, Nikki, you'd know you have a disease called scurvy. And that's where you have really poor wound healing and your skin just loses all its strength. So clearly that's a big issue. Vitamin C deficiency is really not a major public health issue for most people. We get plenty of vitamin C. So normally it's put in there because we know that vitamin C is needed to make collagen. So they just put a bit extra in there as a bit of an insurance policy. It is super cheap. It doesn't add anything to the price. It's ridiculously cheap. So most forms of collagen contain vitamin C because it seems like a good thing to put in there. Or you could eat a few more oranges or some broccoli. You know, you get the same results. So it can't hurt to put it there. And I have no issue with seeing it there. My supplements put it in there.
Mm. And I'm going to jump back to skin health because that's obviously the area where there's the most research at the moment. With the research, is it just from supplemental forms or does it also look at like topical forms of collagen? So like having skincare that has collagen in it.
So there has been some clinical trials in a medical setting for topical collagen to do with wound healing, and the results look promising, as well as oral collagen for wound healing, particularly ulcers. And the results are consistent across the board that they seem to indicate a benefit. So we see it in more wound healing setting because you do clinical trials. And there are, of course, beauty topical products for collagen. I'm neutral. I don't know if there's much of a benefit or not. But the fact we can see some benefit in wound healing doesn't mean I'm not closed off to the idea. But if you're buying topical collagen, it might be a fairly expensive beauty product as well. So I prefer to get your beauty from within and take your oral collagen rather than the topical stuff.
Fair enough. And I guess from all of your research and sort of diving into collagen, apart from, you know, the claims about gut health that we've sort of really put a dampener on, and the fact that there's no such thing as vegan collagen right now, is there anything else that you've seen crop up or you've heard in conversation that doesn't actually have any substance to it?
No, because they're the main ones I hear about to do with gut health. There are some emerging areas that are certainly of interest. I've seen one or two clinical trials, either in humans or some preclinical trials, to indicate a benefit of collagen on bone health, as well as potentially in glucose control in diabetes and even in high blood pressure, hypertension. collagen is more than skin health. The peptides can have effects throughout the body. So I'm seeing more developing research, to use a nice term, because I wouldn't say the evidence is strong at all. It's quite weak to begin with. But bone health, diabetes, and hypertension all have some emerging research to show it could have a benefit. So it shows that there's diversity effects of collagen in the body. So I'm not dismissive of any claim I hear about collagen. It could be plausible. It could be plausible. And to me, they're the big ones. Joint health, skin health, they're pretty big ones people want to know about. And that's where most of the claims about collagen come from. And there's good evidence now to back them up, at least for skin health. You know, you can't have 26 randomized controlled trials. It's very hard to say, no, it's all just made up. You know, it's all fraudulent. There is definitely something to the story. And I've seen enough research come and go over the years that collagen story is growing stronger and stronger over time.
And I mean, that space of even glucose control or blood pressure, that's quite interesting.
Absolutely.
Even understand how that would even be working in the body, maybe from the inflammation perspective.
Definitely. It certainly has the collagen, these collagen peptides are thought to have more anti-inflammatory effects as well. So we're learning more about their biological effects. And we'll see more clinical trials in these areas emerge over time.
So interesting. So when it comes to collagen, what would your three key messages be about the collagen story so far?
So I would, so all of the newspaper articles that are negative about it, I would dismiss them, that they are, those claims are not true. There is good evidence for a range of health conditions. All the research is not funded by the collagen industry, and there's a plausible mechanism why it should work. If, so long as you are not a vegan, then, and you're interested in the collagen story, you can trial it for yourself. See how you go. See what sort of results you get for general joint pain, for skin health, and so on. You can try it for at least 8 weeks. And if you get a benefit, great. If not, you can stop taking it. But it is a supplement that you don't just take for a while and that's it. You know, you're good to go. It's generally taken a long term, unless it's more to do with maybe injury, exercise, recovery, and repair, particularly tendon injuries, where you may take it for a short period of time to help support your body's recovery. But otherwise, it's more of a long-term game. So it's worth trialing. Make your choice based upon how much collagen you get per dose and keeping very much a clear eye on the price. Don't overpay for hype and expensive ingredients. And in the end, treat it as a food. If you really want to go low budget, just go to the supermarket and buy gelatin. Many of the clinical trials have used gelatin as well. It may not be as effective as hydrolyzed collagen, but certainly I can find clinical trials where they've used just gelatin, and that is cheap. Just don't put it in your coffee or else it will turn into a jelly mess.
Yeah, not what you want in the first thing in the morning.
No.
That's great, Tim. And I mean, in your world, in your work, you dive into a lot of different areas around with nutrition, the research. And how do you share all of the work that you do at the moment?
So I have a very strong communication platforms through my blog, through my podcast, and on social media. And a lot of the collagen stuff I've spoken about today, I've done blog posts and podcasts. Very easy to find. Podcast has a big following. It's Thinking Nutrition, and you'll find it where you get all of your podcasts, be it Apple, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, so Thinking Nutrition, or else my website, thinkingnutrition.com.au. You'll find a whole lot of content there on a huge range of popular health topics. And then through that, you'll be able to stalk me on social media and find all my links on Insta, Facebook, and Twitter.
Thanks so much, Tim. Well, it's been great to chat to you today and get to the bottom of the collagen story thus far. No doubt you'll keep your finger on the pulse with collagen in the years to come.
Absolutely.
the research is going to stop.
It's not, if it does a big U-turn, I will do a U-turn with it and say, nah, it was all just rubbish research, you know, get back to where you were. Unlikely, but also if the research keeps developing in positive areas, I will keep communicating it and talking about it. And just to be clear, I'm not funded by the collagen industry. I'm very fascinated by the science. I like talking about it. And in the end, I take it myself. I think, it's pretty good research. So I'll trial it for skin health and for sport and exercise recovery and for joint health. Does it work for me? I think it's a benefit. There you go. It's hard to tell because it's N=1, but I at least have research to show that on average, it should be a benefit. But everyone's mileage varies.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? We've got the evidence, but ultimately everyone's personal experience is going to be slightly different.
Absolutely. So, and that is valid. It's valid.
Yeah. So we've always got to take that into consideration as well. Great. Well, thank you so much, Tim, for joining me on this episode today.
Great to chat with you today, Nikki.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of How to Thrive. There is a lot of noise in the nutrition, health, and wellness space. There are a lot of claims that are made based on either poor evidence or no evidence at all. I love bringing guests on to help share a range of topics that vary from my area of expertise. I want this podcast to be a tool that helps you feel confident in where your information is coming from and empowered to make choices that work best for you. Finding what works for you is essential, and when we do, all the noise, all the fads, all the nonsense can just blow right by. It can be freeing to reclaim that brain space and energy to focus on the things that really matter in life. If you really love listening to How to Thrive, please consider leaving a review so more people can discover the podcast, and share it with any friends or family that may also enjoy listening. If you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, you will get notified when new episodes are released. Any comments or questions, don't hesitate to drop me a line over on Instagram at Nikki Hursthouse. Until next time, take care and stay well.